Welcome to the Alpha Man podcast with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall. In this podcast, we hold fascinating conversations with people from the world of financial markets and from related areas. In this series, we delve into the lives and stories of extraordinary guests whose experiences give us a fresh and powerful lens through which to understand the mental, emotional, psychological, and behavioral challenges people face when encountering risk, uncertainty, and complexity within financial markets. Today, we have a special episode. Four of our previous guests, all veterans of the financial markets, have volunteered to share their experience and reflections of the crazy markets of the past few weeks since the start of the coronavirus epidemic. In four short 10-minute interviews, you will hear the collective wisdom of Anthony Crudelli, Brad Steinbarger, Adam Nash, and Greg Gossett.
What's happening in this type of market is that the brain wants to be active in it because the activity breeds activity. To do something.
The people who are doing the best are actually excited about what they're seeing in markets and the possibility.
Honestly, this crisis, I think, is almost like every crisis I've ever traded, all wrapped into one.
I think for futures traders, this is really what we live for.
Before we start, just a quick thank you to our sponsor, the Society of Technical Analysts. The STA, the Society of Technical Analysts, is the world's oldest body for the advancement of education in technical analysis. They run some brilliant courses, including home study courses, and much of their work is written by leading figures from the world of financial markets. You can find more about their work on their website, sta-uk.org.
In this podcast, we meet four masters of the markets from four diverse locations, each from different markets, each trading different styles, and each willing to share their views and perspective on the recent market behavior, how they reacted to it, and what advice and lessons they are willing to share. For our first interview, we are headed to sunny Florida, where our first master of the market is Anthony Crudelli. Anthony is a 20-plus year veteran of the market, was originally a CME pit trader, and focuses primarily on trading US stock index futures. Anthony also hosts the Futures Radio Show, a weekly podcast show where he interviews traders, CEOs, and other proven market participants about relevant trading and investing information. Anthony was a guest on the Alpha Mind podcast earlier this year, with his episode proving to be one of the most popular ones to date. In the podcast, Anthony shared his thoughts about stress and pressures of the job, and told movingly about how he suffered a heart attack as a trader whilst trading, despite being fit and healthy in every way. As you will hear, Anthony was as giving and eager to share his advice as ever.
Sure, I think for futures traders, this is really what we live for. Having traded through 2000, 2001, 2007 to 2009, I've had, and actually, several moments actually in between those years, but those are really the standout moments in time where we've had similar volatility to this. That for me as a futures trader, primarily E-mini S&P is my market of choice when we have this type of volatility. I've seen this type of volatility before, maybe not as extreme in terms of point moves. Even percentage moves these days have been pretty crazy, but for me, because I've been through this, it's just going back to what worked for me during those times. And I think that we always talk about as traders, nothing matters until it does, right? And that's that kind of conversation that we've had. We have it on social media. We say, well, look at this headline or the Fed or certain things. This doesn't matter until it does. And then with COVID-19 is one of those things where I thought it was going to have an impact a little bit earlier than it did, but it didn't until it did, right? And it's one of those things where when it started to take hold, you look at the market action and you say, okay, this is now a big deal. And obviously it got into a much bigger deal than I ever would have imagined. But we saw that through the charts. So I always look at the headlines or the theme that's happening in the market. Then you look at the impact it's having on the charts. And obviously, when the volatility started to pick up, we knew that this was serious. And I think each day, all of us were digesting how big of an impact this was going to have. And each day, my mind was spinning with how many different situations I thought that this could impact. and still am to this day for that matter. But once I saw the type of moves that we have not seen in a good period of time, I start basically taking note of a couple things. It's really a little bit of a different mindset I have than on a regular day-to-day basis. And that is, when volatility spikes like this, one of the first things that come to my mind are reactions to my areas is the most important thing. It's always the case when I'm trading, but it becomes even more important during this time, because I would much rather get into a move underway than step in front of a move and anticipate a new move coming underway. Because if you're trading breakouts, it's one thing. I trade support and resistance levels. So if it gets a support or resistance, and at this point, you could basically throw out whatever the theme is in terms of bullish or bearish, because you're going to have 40 to 50 handle moves in the S&P and potentially 5 minutes. So I have to be open to trading both sides of the market. Obviously, initially, when we had the breakdowns, I was more interested in shorting than I was getting long. But even then, because I know the bounces could be so vicious, watch it hit the area. And when it hits the area that you like, when it starts to go that way, get into the move underway and just be smaller. And that's the number one thing that I look at, is because in the past, what I learned was they go so much further than you think. So you try to be perfect and you get stopped out. So instead of trying to be perfect, I'm trying to catch the move as the move is already underway, I call it. So if you have a support or resistance level that it hits, I wait to see what it does. Maybe several minutes afterwards, and a lot could happen in a minute these days, but I will look to see if it reacts off that level immediately. Then I say to myself, okay, it reacted off of that level immediately. Get in small, and maybe I'll get out if it goes right back below that area immediately. And I'll wait to see if maybe I'll watch the reaction again. So what I'll do is I will just trade really small than a move that's underway, and try to position myself to where, okay, I'm in small enough, but I'm not going to throw everything at this right away. And if it goes back below that area, either I'll trim the position or even cover it, depends on how many contracts I may have on. And if it does go my way, then maybe I'll just stay small and I'll try to hold that move for a longer period of time. Now, for example, let's just say that it goes through an area that I like. And I'm like, wow, the reaction really didn't look so good there. But my stop price, it gets just within range of that stop price. Let's just say that right now my average stops are going to be anywhere between 10 and 15 handles in the S&P. But let's just say it gets to 3-4 handles away. I might step in there, because now I'm maybe going against the move being it's not underway, like I just mentioned. But now I could get in small. I only have a quarter of the risk, a quarter of the distance of the stop. Maybe not the total risk, because I might trade bigger. I guess the contract size will determine how much that risk is. But now I'll trade really close to my stop and say, hey, look, if it stops here and doesn't get my stop and turns back around and then gets above the area or below the area that was of interest to me, then maybe I'll add. And now I might have a really good trade on here. So that's just, that to me is the mindset, is that wait for moves that are underway. And if they don't, if they get to that area and they don't react the way you want, trade really close to my stop, because at that point, I might have a 50 handle. In some situations, I've had anywhere between 30 and 50 handles of possibility to make on a trade and only having maybe 3 to 5 handles of risk. So in those instances, I just say, you know what? I'm going to put something small on here. If it stops me out, it's over. But that's just a mindset that I have in these types of markets. Speaking of risk sizing, so for me, I have had the same amount of risk that I would take on a trade, but my contract size has gotten smaller because the distance from the stop is further. So I think this is a mistake that people make all the time. They trade one contract size and they're used to a consistent distance of stop loss. That doesn't work in this because sometimes the stops might be 10 handles, they might be 15 handles, they might be 7 handles. So on each contract, for my risk per trade, how far I am from that stop is going to determine how big, how many contracts I will trade. There's something else that I do in this environment is I will keep a core position. And I will keep a position that is small enough to where if it hits that stop, I'm fine with it. Now, I will watch reactions around my area and trade around that position. So then I will allocate a portion of that total risk per trade to essentially scalping around the core position. So I may be risking less on what I would consider a position I'm going to hold to its furthest target at this point right now, because I want to have the ability to trade around a core position. That's extremely important to me because, I mean, I'm the first to admit, I've been getting stopped out of so many losers lately, it's unbelievable. But I've been making money just because I've been keeping the core positions, and then all of a sudden I'll get one where I'll get in and the reaction will be great. And now I have a core position and a position that I added that's running my way, and I scale out of that one, which compensated hopefully for a lot of the maybe losses that I've taken along the way. And then that core position I let ride out. I can't say enough about what I would consider feelers as well in this. I think the micros are a great market, even for traders that can be risking several thousand dollars per trade. I actually started trading some micros because the micros give me the ability to feel what it feels like into that position. I can't stress enough that you could feel the pressure. Anybody who's been doing this for a while, when you get in something and you're looking around going, man, you could feel the pressure. There is a sense of being actually in the market versus just waiting and saying, okay, well, should I be in here? That's why the micros are a great tool to be able to feel the market to where you can minimize that risk and scale. And I think it's also important, what's happening in this type of market is that the brain wants to be active in it because the activity breeds activity. So therefore, what happens is if you're trading your normal contract sizing, you're scaling in, what happens is that you are triggered to want to do something. You go to the micros, your risk is taken down dramatically, and you could actively work your way into a position without putting on the amount of risk that you would on having on the larger contract size. So that's just my thoughts on that. Just to recap quickly, because I know this is going to be a quick little interview, is trade close to your stops if they go through your areas right away. You know, for me, that's just one of those things where I'll put something on small and see if it doesn't hit the stop and then it regains my area, then I can start trading accordingly around that position that is now, in terms of distance-wise, smaller amounts of risk, and then I can add accordingly. Also using micros, because if you are in an area that's very big, very wide in terms of risk, and you want to participate or you want to feel the action, micros are a great tool to do that. And who's to say that you can't make money with them? That's not true. I've made some money with the micros as well. And also trading moves underway. You know, why be in a hurry to step in front of any move, even if you have this underlying big picture bias, right, to where you say the market is going to make a new low for the year or the market is going to rally back substantially here in the S&P, there's too many moves in between. So therefore, I like to wait for a move to be underway before I start getting into what I would consider a full risk position. For me, because I trade specifically off of predetermined, well, they're not predetermined, but they are support and resistance levels that I wait to see how they react. And a big thing for me is to see how the bars, hourly bars, close above or below them. That doesn't necessarily happen towards a straight reverse. But what it does do is I might just stay strictly on those small positions because I'm like, this is a trade. It tells you a lot. It's information. Either one, that I'm going to step away from this trade or I'm not going to be aggressive with it because the action is not supporting it. It also tells us that look at, maybe we're setting into a choppy market. I think the one thing that we don't talk about enough is getting in the rhythm with the markets. I mean, it's hard to determine what one day that we're going to just go straight up or straight down. If all of a sudden I'm in a move or I'm in a trade where it's just everything is going back and forth, like Thursday, I got chopped up. It was my worst day of the month. Our worst day in the last month was this past Thursday. And that was because that I would be getting into a move underway. It would go against me. I would trim some that would go right back my way. It would start working. I'd get right back in. It would make me feel like it was going to be good. And then boom, all of a sudden I would be getting stopped out. And that happened multiple times. And I was like, okay, look at what's happening around you. And I put this tweet out. The market is getting really choppy now. Even things that look like they're underway and they're proving to me what I want to see are coming right back. So therefore, I'm adjusting my risk per trade. I'm taking things down. I'm not going to be forcing the issue into anything. I'm going to be very skeptical of adding to winners at this point. Now I'm more or less just being small in and small out. And I'm not scaling and looking for as much. So it's just, so once again, going back to what you said, I may not be reversing, but it's information letting me know what the environment is. Even like I talked about it in our last interview before I came on this interview with you, I'm always doing meditations. I think it's extremely important. I've actually been doing more of it because I would say that the stress hit me a little bit this past week. You know, you're inside all day, every day. And, you know, even though I've been walking my dog quite a bit, I feel like I've just been really so connected to the market so often, so much more than I have been in the past, that I started to feel a little bit of just that buildup, almost like that lactic acid buildup, right? Like you would feel from working out where you felt it. I felt it through my body. And I said, you know what? Yesterday was Saturday. You and I are recording today on a Sunday. I basically just did nothing digital yesterday to totally remove myself from it, to get myself back to when I was feeling good. Because I don't care who you are, or how old you are, or how young you are, and how healthy you are, this will wear on you. And somebody put this to me a while ago. They go, how often are you charging your phone throughout the day or the week? Quite often, right? So how often are you charging yourself? And I think it's extremely important. I've been upping it because I felt that it's necessary. My body's telling me and my mind's telling me I need to.
Next, we're headed up the Atlantic coast to Dr. Brett Steenbarger. Brett is one of the world's leading trading psychologists, author of several leading books on trading psychology. Brett brings both an academic and practical perspective to this episode, as well as being a medically trained psychologist who has worked with people in trauma situations. Brett has gained a powerful reputation over two decades working with traders from leading hedge funds and investment firms, and as a coach helping traders deal with their own market-induced traumas. Brett was a guest on the podcast late August, and his episode on ego, trading, and spirituality remains our second most downloaded episode. In this episode, Brett talked about his new online book, which is available on his excellent TraderFeed blog. Brett also is an active investor in the market for himself. Brett's work with leading hedge funds in the industry allows him to share his reflections on market participants from a different angle, and typically with a more longer-term focus. I posed this question to Dr. Steenbarger at the beginning of his interview. Whether the collective mind of the market will change through this, you know, this spirituality link, this compassion that's building globally, whether there'll be an impact on crowd behavior as we come out of this different spell, whether we're going to be thinking differently, and how that might translate into you know, self-behavior within the behavior of markets, really.
Yes, yes. You know, the crowd behavior that I see is denial. I do not think that a large segment of the population is taking the current situation as seriously as it needs to be taken. And I think that will only lengthen the crisis, unfortunately, lengthen the period of unemployment, lengthen the impacts on economies, and lengthen the impacts on markets. You know, there are certainly people in, you know, in their social distanced mode, but even just today, I was reading about areas where the peak in cases has already started falling, and people are going out in public, and people are going to tourist sites, and people are going to restaurants, and acting as if it's an all clear signal. Until we have very effective therapeutics and a vaccine, it's hard to imagine an all clear signal. But that's my concern, and I think that could happen elsewhere as well. I think the mindset in the U.S. is prepared for that. People are tired of being in their socially distanced mode, and once the number of cases goes down, I think there's a lot of pent-up desire to be in restaurants and to be in public and to see people again. And unfortunately, just because the number of cases goes down during a period of social distancing doesn't mean that the virus is gone. And until we have effective treatment, I think we could be seeing rolling periods of infection, rolling periods of social distancing, and rolling impacts on markets and market volatility. What's really unusual, you know, I'm a psychologist. I work with people in financial markets. I follow markets myself. What's really unusual here is that the situation in with respect to healthcare and the population, the situation is more grave than people are taking for granted. The situation in financial markets for people who trade and invest is that this is an unusual period of opportunity. This is not a time to be in a coping mode. People are doing, the people I work with are doing very, very well in markets, and yet there's this horrific healthcare situation befalling us. So it's a crazy mindset, a crazy situation where in the trading, one has to be on the front foot and take advantage of all the volatility, the movement, and on the other hand, to be restrained and careful with respect to one's lifestyle to stay healthy, to stay protected. Traders are blown up too, depending on their strategies, how they trade. But it's been an unusual period of opportunity, particularly for short-term traders who benefit from market movement and trade on an intraday basis. They're the ones doing the best, in my experience. It's tough to have big picture views here, big investment views, when the course of the virus itself and the prospects for the delivery of an effective vaccine are so uncertain. Look at the 538 site, Nate Silver's site, and they poll experts for projections. The Good Judgment Project does the same thing. They poll experts on their forecasts of what's going to happen with this virus situation. And, of course, they come up with a median forecast, but the dispersion around the mean, the variability around the mean, is huge, even among the experts. They can't agree on how bad this will be, how long it will proceed, and that makes it very difficult for the bigger picture investor. The day trader can take it move by move, day to day, and that's where more of the success has been. Even at the hedge fund level with portfolio managers, much more tactical risk-taking and less emphasis on big macro theses. Very much so. And it's very difficult, as you say, to be a whale because particularly during these higher volatility times, liquidity in markets has been poor. And so if you try to move any size whatsoever, you just get swamped by the bid-offer spread. So it's very difficult to be a whale. But interestingly, there are portfolio managers who are managing significant capital who are finding ways of being tactical and who are focusing on their areas of specialization to see what is mispriced and to tactically go after those niches of opportunity. That has worked in the fund world. Again, it's that bigger picture, fundamental, longer term kind of investing that's been difficult in this environment, and I think will continue to be until we get some clarity on therapeutics, until we get some clarity on a vaccine, and so forth. In general, I would say relative value traders have gotten killed in the recent environment. And the reason is partly what you mentioned with the volatility and with shifting correlations, and particularly with the vol of vol, with the volatility of volatility itself, then what normally would come in on a spread trade can just blow out. And so some of the biggest problems I've seen among money managers has been in the strategies that worked very well early in the year when volatility was low and you could count on mean reversion. When volatility is blowing out, then stretched becomes more stretched. You know, on my Trader Feed blog, I just posted an article that talks about how to trade with discipline in this kind of environment. And so I'm trying to put out perspectives that I'm seeing among the people I work with that are working. And I really do think it takes a dual mindset, one of real care in and staying positive in one's personal life, doing the things that produce well-being, doing the things that give us fun and fulfillment and energy to keep ourselves afloat in this difficult healthcare time, and then being able to switch gears to be very tactically oriented in pursuing opportunity in markets. The people I'm working with who are doing the best are actually excited about what they're seeing in markets and the possibility. And so it's almost as if they have a dual mindset, one in their personal life, one in their trading. And they are working closely with others. They're using teamwork at home and at work to maintain each of those mindsets. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I'll continue doing that on my Twitter feed. That's at Steenbab. I'm trying to share ideas and research about the virus and trying to share some ideas about what's working in financial markets.
A quick thank you to the Society of Technical Analysts, who this podcast is produced in association with. The Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, are one of the world's leading bodies for the promotion of education and research into the field of technical analysis. You can find out more about their outstanding diploma programs, which are delivered at some of the world's leading academic institutions, or their home study courses by going to their website, sta-uk.org. Now back to the podcast. For our third guest, we cross the Atlantic to just outside Lisbon, Portugal, where Adam Nash works from these days. Adam is one of those names not many people will have heard of. He is not active anywhere on social media and has always preferred to keep a low profile as a trader. I have known Adam over 30 years, from when we both worked as traders in the 1980s for a Japanese investment bank. Adam then moved on to work at the French banking giant BNP before deciding to leave the world of investment banking and try his luck trading for himself. First as a pit trader on the London futures markets and then as a screen trader, principally active in European rate and bond futures, but also expanding out when it takes his fancy into other markets. Adam has achieved outstanding success in a long and distinguished career. At one stage, he was the third largest trader in the Euribor futures contracts on the London International Financial Futures Exchange, which itself is and was one of the largest traded futures contracts in the world. Adam was an early guest on the Alpha Mind podcast, sharing his open and honest reflections and advice on trading and how to act in ways which support success. We had many listeners express to us how refreshingly humble and open he was about his own trading and his personal challenges. Here is Adam's reflections on the past few weeks of insane price action.
The first crisis I traded through was the ERM crisis, sterling crisis in 92. And obviously we've had plenty since then. Honestly, this crisis, I think, is almost like every crisis I've ever traded, all wrapped into one. There's been so many different facets to it in terms of we've got credit market stress, You know, you've got a sovereign bond crisis, sort of thing with the BTP in Spanish. Then you roll in some hedge fund solvency issues, potential systemic failure. And then obviously the big catalyst was the oil with the Saudis in, I think, the weekend of March the 6th. So it really has been every crisis imaginable, all rolled into one, not even in slow motion, just and very rapid. I mean, going back to the 2007-08 crisis, that was it felt like a slow-moving crisis compared to what we have now because, you know, I remember back in 2007, Northern Rock in the UK going belly up and the, you know, and all these, and you could see it coming from a mile away and yet the stock markets carried on going up and, you know, and it took ages for it to really feed through. And then when it hit, it obviously hit like, you know, very, very hard and very rapid. And then it was easy to see coming. I mean, this one has been, you know, I mean, even going back to, December this year, or last year rather, when the Fed started to do some repo ops, and there was I spot rat then, and obviously that wasn't necessarily coronavirus, but we had, that was, to me, I started to feel that there was something out there that wasn't right. We then obviously had Trump and Iran at the start of January. And I was actually on holiday in Mexico in the last 2 weeks of January. And that's when things started to become a bit bumpy. And I was looking at Twitter and I was seeing these videos coming out of China of some pretty unpleasant stuff going on with the authorities and people getting locked into their buildings, etc. And but then also another thing we had going on at the time there as well was potentially Bernie Sanders being the candidate for the Democratic Party. And that was causing volatility in the US indices as well. And it really wasn't until we got into sort of February when people started to really panic about, I think we already had the Chinese impacts of the crisis, but then as cases started to develop in Europe, then we sort of started to get a bit panicky. But the real catalyst for that was the Saudi decision or the oil market around about I think it was the weekend of the 5th of March. And I mean, I had a look back at the charts before I had a chat with you guys, and you know, the bond market blew up on the Monday, and then that period of time through there for about the next 2 weeks. But you know, when we had then the BTP, the Italian stuff, and the Spanish stuff just went crazy. Then we had the sterling crash. The sterling market just sterling currency just fell apart. And then you're trying to also deal with all the blizzard of packages and measures that they're trying to do to stabilize the market. And I think the period that probably was the most intensely stressful for me was when you started to see, I mean, it was hedge funds who were obviously in big trouble, but then there were other hedge funds who were hitting options and really looking for a repeat of the sort of the credit crunch. And you started to see the front months in, you know, the euro dollars, the short sterling and the Euribor contracts, which is the Euribor is pretty much what I trade mainly, being hit. And it was very much very, very reminiscent of 2008. And at that stage, I think I'd been a bit slow to react in some ways because I didn't really, you know, I mean, I was in crisis mode, but I wasn't in complete crisis mode. And the minute I started to see those front contracts get hit, I actually started to bail out of everything that I had. I didn't have a huge amount of stuff on long-term plays, but what I did have on, I decided to dump at that point. Luckily, I dumped them at decent prices, and it wasn't too costly. But what it did was it freed me up to be able to react to what was going on, and that was actually an excellent decision, because from there I've actually had a pretty good crisis going forward from there. But I've never seen anything like that, really. I mean, even, you know, we always talk about 2008 as being the ultimate crisis, but this far eclipsed anything I've ever seen before. And I hope never to see it ever again. There was one weekend when there was a bit of focus on the, I think the Friday evening, I can't remember what day it was, weekend in January it was, but there was focus on the coronavirus, and the problems with the supply chains in the, coming out of China. And there was a Democratic nomination race on the Sunday. And up until that point, Bernie Sanders had looked like he was going to win. And Biden won on the, the Sunday. And on the following Monday, the stock market rallied pretty significantly. And so at that time, and I actually speak to a guy in the US who's got a trading room, and he's a veteran trader. You know, he's got years and years of experience, and he was saying the same thing. And I was focusing on what he was saying, because obviously I'm European based and he's much more, you know, in touch with what's going on in the US. And at that time you thought, well, okay, perhaps the stock markets in the US have had a bit of volatility, but now Biden looks like he's going to win. You know, people aren't so scared about Bernie Sanders, but you know, that was pretty, I think that actually might have marked the high from that point. I'd have to go back and look at charts, but it was, you know, we were in that phase where the NASDAQ was going through the roof continuously, and everyone's sitting there going, what the hell, why does this keep going up when it's so blatantly obvious there are some real issues out there? And then obviously the rug got pulled. I can understand other traders who are equity traders purely for being focused on equity, you know, stress and what's happened in the equity market. But as I trade a whole basket of things, but mainly short-term interest rates, but also bonds, you know, government bond futures against, you know, I like to trade the Bund against the BTP, and you know, the moves that were going on were just insane. And as you say, Steve, it was a crisis of all crises, and there was just, you know, stress in every single market you looked at. But what was even scarier was that after, so I think it was on the 9th of March was when we had the bond melt up. The 30-year bond went crazy and went up, you know, a huge number of handles, and then absolutely tanked off those highs. And the Bund, you know, that did a similar thing. And for about 3 or 4 days later, afterwards, the Bunds just kept getting hammered lower and lower and lower. And it felt very much like it was a situation where it was just like, liquidate everything. It doesn't, you know, and there were no safe havens. And you go into that crisis mode of, okay, well, you know, the stock markets are getting absolutely hammered. So what do? You buy government bonds. Well, if you bought the Bunds as a safe haven, just a safe haven, you'd have got your ass handed to you as well. So at that stage, that week, it was probably the hardest week to try and make money. And really, you know, I mean, I did it. Any trader should have been doing it. Cut size, capital preservation, you know. A week like that, sure, I'm sure there was a lot of people who made a hell of a lot of money. But if you weren't on the right side of it, you were going to get run over. And really, your instincts kick in as it's capital preservation at that stage. And you can't be trading the same sort of size you normally trade. It felt like that because, I mean, you know, the ones, you know, 92 was the sterling crisis, the ERM. I think 98 or 99 was the LTCM, and the NASDAQ blow up. I think there was a real estate run in there as well at some stage. And then obviously we had the 08, you know, Lehman thing. So, and so you've got all the recipes, the emerging market. I mean, it was, you know, the emerging markets were, you know, the dollar was going absolutely crazy. And then the credit market stress as well. So, you know, and then on top of that, you know, the headline maker was, you know, seeing the Dow dropping, you know, ridiculous number of points, you know, on a daily basis. So there were all those things wrapped up in all into one. But obviously, for any trader, they're looking at their one particular thing. So, you know, if your focus is equities, you know, and it just so happens that I tend to look at an awful lot of markets at any one time, and you know, it's difficult to keep up with what was blowing up at any one particular time. Well, first and foremost, there's an awful lot of traders who would probably describe this as veteran traders who weren't around in 2008. And any trader who's been around for less than 5 years, who's managed to survive the last 2 or 3 months, I'd say, well, first of all, hats off, because you've done a great job of actually staying in the game. You know, I know this American guy, and his favorite expression is, you know, making money is the easy part, keeping it's the game. You know, when you go through periods like this, it's very easy, you know. You know when if you're trading technical levels. So you know, I'm not particularly a technical level trader, but you know, if you've got a level in the NASDAQ or the Bund or whatever you're trading, you know, those levels that they will, you just forget about levels. When the market gets like that, you just, you know, levels do not matter. So you know, for starters, you know, levels traders would have been, you know, really struggling with that, and so you come into a point where also how deep are your pockets? Because you might come down to an area where you feel like something's a buy or something, or get up to somewhere you think it's a sell. But when levels don't actually really matter anymore, you've got to scale in. I mean, as I say, and I still maintain this, even now we're April the 6th, you know, I'm still not trading the size that I would normally trade, and I can't see myself trading any kind of, you know, the usual size for some months going forward, because I don't think we're at the acute stage, but I think we're still going to be, it's still going to be very, very bumpy for the next few months. So rather than going in and, you know, if you're a three lot trader, don't pay 47 for three lots. You know, scale in and scale out, and hold something in your back pocket. So you're not going to get, you know, because if you're living and dying on levels, then, you know, the way these markets have been, there's no respect to levels. And although we are starting to return back to orderly markets, you know, even today, you know, I've woken up this morning and the Dow's up 1,200 points, and, you know, and they're not, that's not a normal day. You know, that kind of volatility is just not normal, you know. So to traders who are new, you know, well done for surviving to this point, but be aware that whatever's worked for you to now doesn't necessarily, during this crisis, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work for you going forward. You've got to respect what's, you know, that these volatility can kill you as quickly as it's potentially made you a lot of money thus far during this, you know. And, you know, the other thing I'd always say is you know, the thing we're coming into now is, you know, there is some light at the end of the tunnel in terms of, you know, potential ending of lockdowns, you know, the curve is being flattened, etc. And there is now this, you know, there's a two-way narrative about, do we return back to buy the dip in the stock markets, and are we going to see some kind of V-shaped recovery, or are we going to go into the next, you know, a Great Depression? And these two narratives are now playing out. And we're not going to get much clarity for the next couple of months, because the data, we all know the data is going to be horrendous. It's a question of, you know, sort of don't get yourself married to an idea of, yes, I think it's going to be a V-shaped recovery, or no, there's definitely going to be a Great Depression. Because if you were short on Friday, you'd have made a lot of money. This morning, you'd have got, you know, killed on the move up on the stocks today.
Last but not least, we head to the Pacific West Coast of the US, where Greg Gossett is based. Greg is a private retail trader who focuses on trading US stocks. Greg has been actively trading stocks for over 23 years and also provides a daily summary of his thoughts and reflections on his YouTube channel, which he shares openly and which has been a fantastic learning resource for many other retail traders. Greg was our guest in October, and his inspiring story proved enormously popular. In the episode, Greg shared his reflections on his journey into trading, his early trials and struggles, and how with time and persistence, he has managed to produce a consistently profitable track record. He also offered some excellent advice for other retail traders keen to develop their own trading practice. Now, on this episode, we must apologize in advance for some sound interference. It appears that Greg's mic may have been too close to the fan on his laptop. This came out much louder on the recording than we had realized. However, please do not let you put this off from listening. Once again, Greg's reflections and advice are full of nuggets worthy of the gold found in the mountains close to his home.
Yeah, well, it's been an epic time, obviously, and I think, you know, I was thinking before the call, and you know, I think the one thing that stands out to me is for, you know, retail traders or all traders, is the, you know, having to respect the risk of the market. I think over the past couple of years, people have been lulled into this sense that it just basically goes up, and you know, you don't have to respect risk as much. But I mean, this has been an epic move, and I think it needs to bring to all traders, they need to keep in mind having to respect the risk and the increased volatility that we've had. And I think going forward, we should always be doing that, you know, respecting the risk. It's like being in an ocean, and, you know, it's nice and balmy, and the ocean's calm. But you always have to respect the ocean and what it can become. And I think this is what the market has become. And I think, you know, the main takeaway here is, at least for me, as this sell-off had, you know, started to increase, the importance of having to adjust for volatility in respect to your position size, you know, because if volatility picks up three times, it's like having three times the position, you know. So if volatility picks up two times, three times, four times, the importance of reducing your position size and standardizing your position size to adjust for the volatility, I think, is hugely important. And you know, I think that's the one thing that came to my mind over the last couple months, of how grateful that I am that I did adjust for this volatility. You know, you look at the ranges in the last couple of years, and they've been pretty small, and you know, volatility has increased 3-4 times. And of course, then you have to counterbalance that with your psychology of, you know, if you take a hit, of course, you know, from a human standpoint, you want to be able to make that back, and it's frustrating. You cut your position size down and the market rallies huge, and then you only have this smaller position size. But I think it's very important that people, if traders had losses this year, to fight the urge to want to make it back quickly. You know, trying to make back losses quickly, I mean, of course, as you two know, is the best way to lose more money quickly. So I think you have to be content with reducing your position size, making back portions of your losses, but taking the long view of, okay, this may take me 6 months, a year, or longer to make back these losses, but not throw good money after bad with, you know, revenge trading and trying to make it back quickly. But yeah, you're having to fight yourself, again, to try to want to make it back, or, you know, try to pick a bottom. It's I think it's a very difficult thing to do. But on the other hand, I'm a fan of, if the market gets volatile, if you've had losses, I think it's important to continue to trade and not start to pick and choose when you think is a good time to take a signal or when you think is not a good time to take a signal. I think you, when you have a signal based upon your time frame, your signals, your plan, even if you've had losses, even if the market is volatile, in my opinion, I think it's important to continue to take those trades, but with reduced position size. So you just don't get in the habit of picking and choosing and picking and choosing, because a lot of times when people do that, they pick the wrong times. I think it's important you just continue to trade your plan, although with smaller position size, to adjust for the volatility. That's exactly what I was talking about. If you stop trading, and that's a good way to put it, you stop feeling the market. And so, yeah, 100%. Whether you're going, you know, you only take a 10%, you know, a tenth of what you normally take, just to keep in the market, just to keep in the habit, and like you said, to feel the market, I think is very important. Yeah, I mean, it's part of my approach, you know. I mean, I have to do that. Like I mentioned last time in our interview, you know, going on the walks after the trading day and reflecting upon what did I do right, what did I do wrong, how could I improve every day, plus the health benefits of it. I think it's extremely important. I mean, that's just my approach. You know, other people may have other approaches, but I think you have to reflect on the day's trading. What did I do right? What did I do wrong? And like I mentioned before, my goal of the day after I get done with trading, when I'm out on my hike, walking with my dog, I don't want to have any regrets, buying regrets or selling regrets. Of course, you know, putting on a trade, anything you do, you really have no control over it, but you want to, at the end of the day, when I reflect back, I want to make sure I was like, no, you know, I didn't take too many positions today. They were uncorrelated. I had good setups. I don't ever, at the end of the day, while I'm on my walk, want to go, you know, I think I was a little impulsive on that, or oh, I think I was too heavily correlated on that position. So I don't want my goal of the day, regardless of whether it was a profitable day or an unprofitable day, is just not to have any buyer's remorse or seller's remorse. I don't know how you could survive without it. I don't know how you could survive without a real plan, real defined criteria of what you're doing in your process. I mean, shooting from the hip in this market, with all the emotions that are stirred up from this market, I don't know how anybody can make it through. In any times, you need to have a plan. You need to know what you're going to do. If this happens, you need to know what you're going to do. If that happens, more important now than ever, but in any trading environment, any market environment, in my opinion, you need an absolute plan of your entries. I have three requirements when I take any trade. One, I need a combination or a confluence of indicators lining up. Ideally on multiple time frames. I look at any particular indicator as a potential group of buyers. And, to improve your chances of having a trade, you need to be in the company with as many other buyers as possible, right? It makes sense. The more buyers you have, the more likely that the stock's going to go up. So, you know, I look for a confluence or combination of indicators, or another way to say it, a confluence or combination of other groups of buyers. Make sure that I have a good risk to reward ratio. I can have a good confluence of buyers or indicators, but it doesn't mean I can have a good risk to reward ratio based upon, legitimate resistance above me, support below me. And then number three is, I'm very aware of the correlation of the positions that I have. I don't take on too many, I have a rule, I can have two tech stocks, I can have two healthcare stocks, I can't buy them on the same day, but correlation is very important. You need to have diversification in the type of positions you take. And then the most important part, I think, in this particular market also is your account heat. You know, how much of your account do you have at risk, even if they aren't in completely uncorrelated positions? So, and then of course, adjusting for volatility, adjusting your position size based upon what's going on with volatility. So, those three requirements really helped me navigate this market. I don't know what I would do without them. I know people have blown up their accounts this year. It's very, very sad, and they have done it because they took a loss, they got punched in the face, they wanted to fight back, they doubled in positions their size while volatility was doubling and tripling. I think if we make it through this market, I think we're going to have, at least on the positive side, a lot of experience going forward to have managed through this market. Everyone's learned something in this market. Everyone's learned something different than they've experienced before. And I think the takeaway is whether going forward they're going to implement procedures to protect them against what happened. Basically, are they going to learn from their mistakes going forward?
Once again, thank you to our guests who have willingly volunteered their time to be on our show at this very busy time. We hope you found their reflections and advice useful and inspiring as we did. These are very challenging times, and for everyone, both personally and professionally, we hope that you stay well and wish you the best. And all of our lives are in some way being affected and touched by the bigger and wider concerns around health and well-being linked to the coronavirus, as well as to the economic impact and consequences of this epidemic. If you've enjoyed this episode, please feel to rate and review it, as well as listen back to some earlier podcasts. I will leave you with that, but again, I hope that you stay well and safe.
Thank you once again to the Society of Technical Analysts, whom this show is produced in association with. You can find out more about the STA and their outstanding home study diploma courses and lecture-based education and diploma programs at sta-uk.org. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Once again, myself and Mark would be delighted if you can go to iTunes and rate and review the show. If you are interested in finding more about our powerful one-to-one trader performance coaching programs, please visit our blog at alphamindblog.blogspot.com and click on the link at the top of the page, or email info@alpharcubed.com. That's the word alpha, the letter R, and the word cubed.com to request information. In addition, my co-host Mark Randall offers powerful workshop and transformative programs. His workshops and programs focus on helping people to optimize mindset, well-being, and performance Mark works with groups from traders right through to board members, and Mark's authentic and unique approach has become recognized as a powerful toolkit to transform the mind into a weapon. More than 25,000 people have benefited from Mark's training. For more details about him and his workshops, go to www.markrandallconsultancy.com. You can also connect with us via social media. My Twitter handle is at AlphaMind101 and Mark's is at AlphaMind102. We are also available to connect on LinkedIn, Stephen Goldstein and Mark Randall, or join our LinkedIn group, the AlphaMind Group. That just leaves us to say thank you once again for listening, and please do feel free to check out some of our past episodes and to make sure you join us in the future. Wishing everyone the best of luck this week. Thank you.